Welcome. This is an audio recording of the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm Jim Falk, President of the Council. The Council is a nonprofit membership organization dedicated to engaging the public in an exploration of global issues and foreign affairs, and we produce over 80 public events each year. To learn more about us or to become a member, visit dfwworld.org. This podcast is made possible through the generous support of Haynes & Boone, LLP. We hope you enjoy it.
It is my great pleasure to introduce you this afternoon to Vicente Fox Quesada, the former president of Mexico and a man whose reputation is as tall as his stature. Originally from Mexico City, Vicente Fox was born on July 2, 1942, to Jose Luis Fox and Mercedes Quesada, the second of nine children. President Fox grew up in the San Cristobal Ranch in Guanajuato State. During his childhood, President Fox would play with the children of the communal landowners, taking part in their games like marbles and other activities. Through these early childhood experiences, he was able to gain firsthand knowledge of, in his words, one of the evils that unnecessarily afflicts our country, poverty. According to President Fox, the only things that set him apart from his childhood friends were the opportunities he had that they did not. One of the opportunities President Fox enjoyed was to study business administration at the Mexico City campus of the Universidad Iberoamericana, where he recalls how much his ranch hand appearance contrasted with the starched look of his classmates. He went on to receive a top management diploma from the Harvard Business School. In 1964, President Fox joined Coca-Cola de Mexico as a route supervisor. From aboard a delivery truck, he had the opportunity to see for himself Mexico's most remote corners. His work was highly commended, and soon Coca-Cola de Mexico promoted him to president for all of Mexico and Latin America, where he was the youngest person in the company to hold such a position. With this accumulated experience, President Fox decided to return to his home state of Guanajuato to participate actively in business, politics, and education, and to improve life for all of those in his state. He was president and founder of the Amigo Daniel Children's Home Foundation, an institution where many children receive attention and affection. He was also president of the Loyola Foundation and a promoter of the León Campus of the Universidad Iberoamericana and the Lux Institute, an education center where thousands of state residents have received training. He has also served as a board member of the Mexico-American Chamber of Commerce and a director of Grupo Fox, whose companies were involved in farming and agriculture. In 1998, he was elected federal deputy for the 3rd District of León in Guanajuato. While in Congress, he paid special attention to agricultural matters, and he wrote many articles for national and state newspapers. In 1995, he was elected by a 2-to-1 margin as governor of Guanajuato. Under his leadership, Guanajuato became the 5th most important Mexican state economy, and in certain productive sectors, even surpassed the national average. As a result of this excellent governance, he was chosen by the PAN party as a candidate for president of Mexico in elections to be held in 2000. When President Fox won the election in 2000, he broke 71 years of one-party rule. As President Fox steered Mexico's fragile young democracy through turbulent times, he also ushered in stability and reform in the areas of healthcare, education, and housing with increased freedom of the press. His presidency also reduced poverty and tackled corruption. Now, President Fox, with his good friend Rob Allen, has written about his beloved Mexico in his new book entitled Revolution of Hope, The Life, Faith, and Dreams of a Mexican President. A nationally known book reviewer says of his new book, Vicente Fox embodies the American dream in its broadest sense as a vision of the new world as well as the story of Mexico. Elected as a political outsider with a message of honesty, change, and hope, he is truly a world hero of democracy. This vivid book interweaves his inspiring personal story with his bold ideas for the future of the planet. I know we all look forward to hearing from President Fox this afternoon, so please join me in welcoming Mexican President Vicente Fox.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Muchas gracias, muchas gracias. Thank you very much. I'd like to start by thanking and recognizing all my friends from this council all over the United States, the president of it, Jim Jones, very close friends, and my salute to all the dear friends, known faces that I see here. The state of Texas is our very neighboring state to Mexico. Particularly, it's been a great relationship between the state of Guanajuato and the state of Texas. With your permission, I would also like to say hello to Maria, to Xochitl, to Juanita, to Pedro, to Rodrigo, and all of these hard-working immigrant Mexicans that are all over the United States contributing to the better of this economy, contributing to its growth, contributing to build up the leadership of this great nation throughout the world. To them, my love, my respect, my support, and to tell them that I'm with them all the way, that they have this very special personality and form of being of all the immigrants. Of all the immigrants that are a very special caste, very special people, with very special values. And I say this because I am a product of immigration. I come from a migrant family on the side of my father, with my grandfather being born here in Cincinnati, Ohio. His family moving 2 centuries before from Maryland to Strasbourg. And then they moved into the United States, always looking for a better life, always guided by their dreams and their aspirations, always moved with that inner power, that is audacious strength that immigrants have to take risk, to pay sacrifice in order to have a better life for them and their families. And this is also true on my mother's side. My grandfather came from Basque land in Spain without a penny in his pocket at the port of Santander. He got on a ship and he said farewell to his family, saying, "Voy a hacer la América," coming down here to the port of Veracruz, also looking for his American dream. And so did millions and millions of people coming from Europe through Ellis Island and the port of New York. to found and work in this land to look for their American dream. And they joined in and built this great nation, a nation that I love, that I respect, that I feel myself part of. That's why I decided to work for Coca-Cola, the prototype of a global corporation, of a U.S. corporation. And I learned many things from my grandfather, many things from Coca-Cola, and from life. And all of this is what I'm trying to put together in this book, Revolution of Hope. And I do it very candidly. I don't write books to please anybody or somebody. I write book to express my emotions, my sentiments, my perceptions. I write the book to share my thinking, my positions in some difficult issues, but above all, in trying to bring this world harmony, unity, compassion, teamwork, effectiveness, and more so, in trying to be close to those people that don't or have not had opportunities. And this is the core of the building of this nation. These are the values that the founding fathers shared with my grandfather and shared with the citizens of this great nation and shared with all of us that are Americans, because we all who live in this continent are Americans. Those who live in Chile, those who live in Guatemala, Mexico, the Caribbean, Canada, we all are Americans. And most of us share that dream, share those driving ideas, those core values that my grandfather, before riding the horse and getting the blessing from his mother back in 1895, took with him. He made sure that he would come with a package of values down to Mexico to find his American dream, but to found a family that has been there for five generations. And we've been nourished with those values, that heritage that we all immigrants have, those who have come from Turkey or come from Japan or come from Guatemala. That heritage is upon which or where we found our lives and we found our dreams and we work to attain them. One very special characteristic of an immigrant, it's always fighting to reach the impossible and never defeated. Every day they renew these convictions, this passion to keep on the road and to keep on building. This is why every single immigrant, documented or not documented, that is in this land of opportunities, is my personal hero. That's why I love them. But the book deals with many, many things. One that I have encountered on this trip, this tour that we're making in the United States, I'm surprised of misinformation, of the way this debate is being carried on, of the way many people still think that Mexico is a land of violence and crime, that Mexico is a land only of poor people, and that Mexican government is not doing enough to refrain our people within Mexico. And very briefly, let me tell you that Mexico is a modern, solid economy today. The 12th largest in the world. The 7th largest trade balance in the world. Larger that trade balance than all of Latin America together. buying more products and services from the United States than what Italy, France, Germany, and Britain do together. Mexico imports products and services from the United States worth well over $200 billion. That means a lot of jobs for U.S. citizens here. Importing cars, importing computers, importing TV sets, importing services, Mexico is a very solid partner of this nation. And Mexico does not have a deficit on its budget. And all fundamental variables of the economy today have converged with those of the United States. We come from inflation of 150% a year. Today, inflation in Mexico the last 2 years was lower than inflation in the United States. We come from interest rates to get a loan of over 150% too. Today, the prime rate in Mexico has converged, is equivalent to the one here in the United States. So Mexico is a reliable partner through NAFTA with this great nation, as well as Canada is. And that is why my vision is that the fruitful that NAFTA has been in the first 10 years, we should project a new vision and further integrate to the convenience of the three nations. Each one of us has something to offer to the neighbor. We have oil, we have productive and talented working people, we have production of food, farming and cattle, to provide all of the United States like we're doing in vegetables, 70% of all the broccoli that we just ate here, and the cauliflowers and the Brussels sprouts come from Mexico. And a good part of it come from San Cristobal, where you have your home, all of you, and where you're invited to come, and I mean it, where we're building a presidential library for the first time ever in Mexico or in Latin America. I am not going to be a president that stays quiet. I am not run away like former presidents did in Mexico. I am not going to hide. I love my people. I love the people in Chiapas. I love my brothers and sisters, indigenous, and I just love to walk the streets of Mexico, visit the communities in Mexico, the small communities, and I do it by the hand of Marta, my dear and beloved wife, which I miss her right now because she usually is at my side and she is right here, but she's working at this moment. I hope she will join us. Sharing love is a key issue. Politicians guided by spiritual values and more guided by God than by Paul's is what we need in every nation. It's what we need leading our countries. So Mexico is doing its share, and I know it's not enough, that we have to do much more. But one thing brings us hope and optimism to the future. 25 years ago, Mexico's rate of growth in population was 3.5%. And I don't know of any nation that is able to cope with the needs and the demands of such a large growing population rate. And fortunately today, Mexico is down to less than 1% its population growth a year. So now Mexico will be able to cope with the jobs needed, the homes to be built, the spaces and seats on universities for our kids, because now we will have that opportunity. We're just still meeting this generation of high growth in the rate of population, but Mexico is be reaching the level of a total of 130 million Mexicans, half of what you have here in the United States. And that will be it, because by then, Mexico's population growth will be stopped and beginning to reduce. And this is forecasted by year 2030. Goldman Sachs speaks about year 2040 and makes a projection. And it's surprising to see there that number one economy in the world will be China. Number two economy in the world will be United States. Number three will be India, over and above Japan. Number four will be Japan. And number five will be Mexico. And this is Goldman Sachs projections, not mine. Mexico is working hard to get there. And these projections show how fruitful this partnership can be. But we need a few things. For instance, the experience in Mexico by 72 years of isolation, being in hands of the free, an authoritarian government, controlling the haciendas, the income, the unions, the teachers, controlling electoral processes, isolating the country from observers on human rights, isolating the nation against observers for electoral processes. This was the pre, and we paid the price. We paid the price with crisis after crisis, devaluation after devaluation, in high interest rates, inflation, and up to now we're still paying the price of isolation. Believe me, isolation is no way for any nation that is proud of itself, that is self-confident of its people, and that wants the best. And I just cannot imagine this nation, this great nation that I love, as I said, building walls, when we could be building bridges, when we could be building a future together, when we could be taking decisions on issues like immigration, instead of leaving the field loose. When that happens, fear is dominating the decision-making process on immigration. And xenophobics are trying to take the lead and bringing in conflict to the issue because they want to stop it, because they don't want this issue to be regulated. And let me say here very clearly, I am not for illegality. I am not for disorder. I am for building those bridges, making sure that we sit down and we discuss what is best for both of our nations, and come up with a framework that will make out of immigration a win-win situation. On this book, I also deal with the future. I also deal with NAFTA's future, with Latin America's future, with global futures in hands of institutions that today are not working like they were founded 60 or 70 years ago, the United Nations, the World Bank. They need reshaping, they need re-engineering, they need reinventing to take them again to their mandate. United Nations was created by United States, by Mexico, and other nations of the world, precisely with the charter of keeping peace and harmony among nations, precisely with the charter of keeping countries out of conflict. And unfortunately, United Nations is not complying with its role, it's not complying with its mandate. But that doesn't mean that now every country has to bypass and do what it pleases. What we have to do is make sure that we have a strong body, strong institution on United Nations, and that United Nations assumes its responsibility under democratic terms. And this is what we should be doing. That is why some difference came between President Bush and myself. But I feel right now, yet being a friend to President Bush, being friends, Mark and I, to Laura, that great lady, his wife, I have a great esteem for the spiritual values of President Bush. I was one of the ones when he convoked us to go to church in Quebec, to the evangelic church, not the Catholic, and I was the first one to go there. And the only other leader that went there is President Lagos from Chile, a socialist and social democrat. The rest, as usually presidents do in Latin America, they don't show up. They don't show their feelings. They don't show their religion. They don't show their spiritual values. And I think that mankind needs that kind of leadership with the spiritual values. With the spiritual values and guided, but the advice of God instead of the false, and guided by humanitarian, solidaristic values. In summary, because I'm very interested in hearing your comments, your questions, so that you let me know where you want me to keep expressing what is on the book. In summary, I want to thank you. I want to thank this community of Dallas. I want to thank Texas that received me with open arms when I was 2 years old. And when I used to come here to buy hogs, pork, machinery, spare parts for the tractors down in San Cristobal, that I relate on the book. Those were great experiences. I learned here to put a nickel or a cent in this machine and get some chewing gums, which we didn't have in Mexico, to get Milky Ways that we didn't have in Mexico. Today, Mexico is that open economy. You find most any product. As a matter of fact, you find more options of cars in Mexico today than you find on this free and open market. Over 850 different options you have to buy a car. Just 10 years ago, you would have no more than 10, 20 options to buy a car. That's free trading, that's openness, that's the way the world should go. Thank you.
President, we're going to ask you to take a few questions, but because you are a cowboy, there are a few of those here in Dallas, and we have a gift for you that we'd like you to open right in front of us, which my mother always told me was bad manners, but we want you to open it anyway because it has a certain significance. It's from Jerry Jones and Wade Phillips, who apparently are having some sort of get-together on Sunday. And we were hoping. This is good. I like this.
Rise.
Sorry, it may take a minute, but there's no time clock running like there was Monday night. Wow. This is... This is your signed, engraved invitation to come out Sunday afternoon to Texas Stadium to see the Dallas Cowboys, led by the son of immigrants, a Mexican-American named Tony Romo, who is going to... He is going to lead the team to defeat the New England Patriots on Sunday. So you are very welcome. Questions? Yes, sir.
Lately, we've been real embarrassed here in America by two larger towns. What could I do as a citizen so I won't be embarrassed by what's been happening by two other cities here in the Metroplex?
What the question is? Please. I apologize for my English. As for the Spanish, President Bush.
I'm from a little city called Hearst, Texas. And there's been two larger cities out here in this area, in the Metroplex, that have been doing some things that are very, very embarrassing to people who think like Democrats, like I do. What can I do?
Well,
he's talking about Farmers Branch and Irving.
See.
Say it like it is.
I am embarrassed too. I think that's no way to treat people. In Mexico, violence is not only with a stick or with a gun. You can have verbal violence. In your actions, you can show violence that irritates, that brings in hate, that complicates things. And I'm totally against that, more so when it comes from the authority. I think rule of law and applying the law doesn't need to violate human rights anywhere. And that's my position on Irving. I hope I can see the mayor and talk to him and other parts of the United States where things are getting difficult. And things like persons like Lou Dobbs, I think he is provoking violence, verbal violence, by the way he speaks about Mexicans and about Mexico and about Mexican government. He does not have the right information, and it's not fair to take a program like that with the audience he has to tell his points of view that he should tell them to his wife and not to the audience, because it's not fair what he's doing.
Interesting anecdote. The other day we were in the green room at CNN waiting to go on for the president to go on for an interview. The president actually had requested to go on Lou Dobbs' program before he came to the United States, and Lou Dobbs chose not to have him as a guest. So Mr. Dobbs came down from his floor and the Time Warner Tower and came down and came into the green room thinking he could have a little ambush to the president and said, you know, I want you to debate me. And the president said, mi casa es su casa. You come down to Mexico anytime. We'll be glad to show you how things really are. We have a question from a student at Richardson Berkner, who my son's team beat 38-7 a few weeks ago. Sorry, Edgar. That's Dallas Jesuit. They did really well. What would you suggest to the new president, President Calderon, to help the illegal immigrants in the U.S.? Or to put this another way, what would you suggest to the U.S. Congress to attain an agreement about a new immigration reform?
I don't think that the brilliant Felipe Calderon needs my advice. He knows what to do. He knows how Mexico is committed to its people. He knows the way to go because he's a smart young man, only 43, with a strong character, Harvard graduate, and he will be the best president that Mexico will have ever had. In relation to Congress, yes, my pledge has been, let's leave the mañana to Latin Americans and to Mexicans. This is the land of hoy, 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 today. And I think, as we do when we're bullfighting, you have to take the bull by the horns. When you have a problem, you sit down, discuss it, analyze it, and you decide. But you cannot leave such a key strategic issue in hands of public opinion or in hands of these conductors in TV media. That debate has to be done within the institutions, and the institutions have to come to a solution to bring order, to bring legality, to have rules of the game that are very clear so that everybody knows where you're playing and how you should behave in playing. But today, most everybody is taking action at local levels, and federal government and Congress are not acting with responsibility in such a key issue.
Next question is, what do you think about standardized testing in education and its impact on students for whom English is a second language? And specifically, do you think immigrants and the children of immigrants should need to learn English in the U.S.?
Absolutely, yes. Every time I meet one paisano, I tell them, please, please take your kids to school, make sure they go all the way to university, make sure they learn English, as well as Americans or U.S. citizens should learn also Spanish as a second language. We're neighbors, we're friends, we're partners, and there should not be any language barriers, there should not be any cultural barriers. We come from very, very strong culture in Mexico, our Aztecs, our Mayans, the pyramids, and all what was constructed in that Mexico. We're very proud of that, and we want to share it with the United States. We can enrich ourselves by working together.
Yes, sir.
Currency in North America. In the spirit of partnership, what are your thoughts and where do you think we will be 10, 15 years ago ahead concerning a unified currency?
Beginning part of the question, for those of you who didn't hear, was there have been discussions about a single unified currency in North America? What's the president's stand on that?
It's a very long, long-term issue. That at the very end is the cherry on the cake. The process that I think is very solid and it's a good example is the process of the European Union. First, the Marshall Plan. And those are big, strong, driving ideas that this nation, United States, developed and led. And that's why Europe was able to stand up after the war and was able to rebuild what they had. That's the kind of ideas that I miss in today's world, that I missed in the leader of this nation for Latin America, for instance. But that step of building the institutions since is what Europe took as own. And from a few countries, Germany, Britain, France, Italy, they decided to start constructing that building of union. And they started integrating different countries, particularly those underdeveloped and those poor, because they were getting a lot of migration. I don't know the figures, but the people that migrated from Spain to Germany were by the hundreds of thousands and maybe the millions, exactly what is going on here today. And I mean, one is clear that the Spaniards went there because they were going to be making a better salary in Germany. But Germany didn't build a wall, and nor did France or Britain. What they built is bridges. And they started, through the Union, developing those nations. First step they took is to put 2% of their gross product into one big bolsa, one big package of money to be invested in poor countries and in poor regions. Today, that fund generates every year over $50 billion, the 2% that every nation contributes to this budget. And all that money every year is invested in infrastructure in poor areas, poor regions, is invested in education, is invested in human capital building in these nations. And look what happened, and the facts are there. Spain at that time, 25 years ago, $3,000 per capita income. Spain today, $24,000 per capita income. Ireland at those days, $2,500 per capita income. Ireland today, $40,000 per capita income. Higher than the one in the United States and higher than most of the countries in Europe, Germany, France. So I think the answer is there. Now the process was open borders, no passport, traffic. 10 or 15 years later, not when they have this huge gap of income, difference between countries. Later on, the currency. Later on, the parliament. Today they have a parliament. And the interesting thing is that nobody has lost anything. Nobody has lost their culture, for instance, which they were afraid of. Spain today keeps wood fighting and keeps buying dancing flamenco. And the British keep playing cricket. The French keep having the best food in the world and the best wine, although I respect Napa. Napa Valley is improving, but it's still Rioja wines and French wines are the best. So nobody lost anything. It's a win-win situation. Look at the difference between those long-term visions, those wisdom ideas. I don't mean that we should repeat or replicate what happened there, but we can build up a vision for NAFTA whereby we all would work together. Now, imagine having a neighbor that is successful, that has prosperity, then you have the kind of neighbor we would all like to see. This is why United States cannot isolate. It has to keep on leading the world in openness, in globalization, in this kind of ideas and programs.
We have time. We have time for just one or two more quick questions. You know, as the president said in the book, not only is the quality of French food still very high, but the quality of French waiters and table service is exactly the same level of friendliness as it's always been.
Presidente Fox, my girlfriend wanted me to ask you a question. And I don't know anything about this, but she wants to know, is it true that after a Mexican immigrant is deported, that Mexico plans to file criminal charges against them as well?
It's criminal?
Yeah, criminal, she's saying. Is Mexico going to file criminal charges against them?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And some people are saying the Mexican government is promoting Mexicans to come here. I mean, we just couldn't do that. I mean, it's our own people. Mexico needs that people. And if it cannot have them busy at this point in time, we still need them. And we want all of them back as soon as possible to keep building out of Mexico also a great nation. That's what we're doing. And today I think it was US Today, or it was Dallas Morning News. On the front page, there's an article that says that Mexico created these lawfare airlines to bring legal and illegal migrants to the border, implying that now Mexico is putting them on a plane and sending them here. That's absolutely false, that article. I think it's misleading, and it's one more of these things that just complicate more and more, because those airlines were created by my government. We decided to open skies in Mexico, and it's incredible. Fares that we were paying of $500 now are $100, and you can fly all over Mexico, and I hope pretty soon they start flying here to United States, because the quality of some airlines here is lousy, like the one we flew yesterday. They had a delay of 2 hours. We never got an explanation. We never got an apology. And they were with happy faces. I mean, like, they were doing the great thing. So there's also some competition needed here on airlines.
Ladies and gentlemen, that comment came as a result of us spending 5 hours yesterday getting from Philadelphia to Washington, which is about an hour and a half apart by car or train. And that was U.S. Air, by the way, for those of you with American Airlines. American treated us great, so we have time for one more question.
Yes, Mr. President Fox, I vote for you in 2002, and I'm so pleased of the result. But one of my biggest questions, talking about flyers, why you don't keep a strong position and develop the Mexico City airport? Because as everybody knows, the develop the communication is what helps the country to grow up and get more business either way. And like everybody knows, the Mexico City Airport is obsolete right now. And this is the only conflict what I have with you, why you don't keep a strong position to nobody stop this, because that's going to be one of your huge projects in your period.
Well, the question, speaking of airports, Mr. President, an airport that I've spent a lot of time waiting in, the Mexico City Airport, the gentleman asked the question about the controversy over the idea to build a new Mexico City, a new airport outside of Mexico City.
Okay, I don't want to make the story long. By the way, it's a little bit touched upon on the book, the Macheteros of Atenco and the airport. In our countries, in democracies, we have some actions that government can take to expropriate land from people for the common good, or the good of the nation. That's where, for instance, the agrarian reform was founded, on taking away land from the private owners and giving it away to the ejidatario, campesinos. My father, my grandfather, acquired the farm in the middle of the revolution, 10,000 acres, and they took away 9,000 acres from him. And he never understood why. He died without having a clear explanation of why the fruit of his work would be taken away from him by government, even if it was for the good cause of giving it to somebody else. And so under that act, we initiated an expropriation process for the land needed for the airport. And the ejidatarios, owner of the land, decided that 5 pesos a meter was not a good price. So I said, well, what is a good price? And we started negotiating. We got up to a 55 peso price, and still the ejidatarios would not sell. I could have had expropriated that land, but I think it's not fair. I don't think it's fair to come in and take away the land of anybody at any price, which is not a commercial price, and if the owner is not willing to sell, well, you find some other alternative. So that's what we did. And so we chose expanding the actual facilities of the airport. A new, beautiful, most modern, intelligent terminal is about to be inaugurated some of these days. And it's a good option. It's good for the next 30 years. It's a much lesser expensive option than the other one was going to be. So when you're governing, this thing of going by the law, no matter what, I have my doubts. And I know the importance of what I'm saying. I know the importance of rule of law. But let's not forget that rules and laws are made by human beings. And at the same time, when you compare these two very key values, which is, this is talking on the book, the value of rule of law or the value of peace. And to me, I think that peace in a country, to have stability, is a very key issue. You can always take the two reins and see how you can maneuver on rule of law and peace. Because if I would have expropriated that land, for sure we would have had violence and maybe many people dead by taking away the land that they thought it was theirs and they didn't think it was right for the government to take it away. Anyway, that was my decision. Thank you. Thank you very much.
For more information about the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth, visit them on the web at www.dfwworld.org.